Welcome back to the Homegrown TV talk show and podcast, where this week we get to know the breeder behind Elevate for the very first time. We sit down with Matt and talk a little bit about how they get their hands on these elite clone-only strains. We dive a little bit into the Elevate tester group and the breeder-tester relationship. We cover how to ensure minimal herm rates when breeding, as well as some herm statistics. We dive into regular versus fem seeds, as well as clone versus seed. And then it all comes to an end with the beautiful new strains that Elevate is going to be releasing, as well as some of the classics that put them on the map. Before we dive into this week's podcast, I want to take a second and thank this week's sponsor, Pulse Grow. You see, these are the guys that make the monitors that I've been using and loving more and more inside of my tents. Mostly the Hub VWC kit. This is what I've been plugging into my substrate to be able to monitor exactly what my soil moisture is and my dryback on a daily basis, no matter where I am. And it's not only this VWC kit that connects to the hub, but an array of different monitors. Whether you're monitoring pH and EC in your reservoir or feeding tank, VPD, temp, and humidity inside the tent, the guys over at Pulse have you covered. So make sure to check out pulsegrow.com for everything grow room monitoring. Like literally everything. Make sure to use code HomegrowTV at checkout to save yourself a nice chunk of change, and it helps support the channel. So thank you to everyone who's been using that code, and thanks to Pulse Grow for sponsoring this podcast. Now let's jump into the podcast. Matt, my brother, thank you so much first off for coming out to the show, brother. How you doing?
I'm doing great. Thank you for having me. I love your show.
Well, thank you. That's an honor. Thank you so much, man. I have recently dived into the world of Elevate, and I love what you guys are doing over there. I'm excited to have you out. We've had a lot of people asking from your guys' community as well. And so I'm excited to do this. For those that might not know Elevate Seeds or might not know your story, Matt, let's take a step back and start with your experience as a breeder and what led you to creating Elevate Seeds.
So, you know, years ago when the medical cannabis really started taking off, I started two commercial grow facilities, and one of the things I realized pretty quickly when, you know, you're out there trying to sell to the dispensaries and things like that, provide for them and for your the patients, is genetics has a lot to do with it. You know, if you get a great yield of flower that people don't want, you know, you can have a hard time doing well with that. And on the flip side, if you have great genetics and you do a good job growing, you know, you can't keep it. Everybody wants as much as you can produce.
Right.
So, you know, and at the time, I wasn't as well connected to getting the genetics that I wanted as I am today. So we ended up buying a lot of seeds and going through them, doing pheno hunts. And at the time, the only place you could get seeds was out of Europe. And so we must have spent, you know, tens of thousands of dollars on seeds. And it was very difficult to find, you know, that one that just really stood out. And despite, you know, us spending a small fortune, actually it wasn't a small fortune, it was a big fortune on seeds.
And, no doubt.
You know, and I thought, you know, I think there's a demand and a need in the community for a breeder to produce and make available great genetics at a reasonable price. And right. So I felt that I could meet that need and charge a fair and reasonable price. And so I started reading everything that I could on breeding, whether it was specifically for cannabis, like DJ Short has a great book on breeding cannabis. And you know, I must have read that several times. And then I started, you know, for about a year, I just got obsessed with, you know, learning about the genetics of plants in general, you know, whether it's dominant or recessive genes and, you know, what happens with the different generations, you know, because you can make a strain more consistent by inbreeding, but you get inbreeding depression and that leads to stunted plants. They're just not the quality. And so there's a trade-off between the consistency of the phenotypes and the quality mm-hmm. of what you end up getting. And so, you know, just learning all that and experimenting with it and, you know, what methods work the best as far as working with regular seeds or working with feminized seeds. and whatnot. And so in the beginning, you know, we didn't really have any reputation. Nobody knew about us. And so to try to get people to spend their hard-earned money on our genetics, you know, was not an easy feat. So we just kept, you know, trucking along. A couple of the first strains that we made, you know, turned out to just be amazing.
Right.
You know, Tangerine Cookies. It was tangy crossed with Thin Mint Girl Scout cookies, and it had a terpene level of like 5.1. And I mean, it was just
wow.
It was just amazing. Wow. It was orange cream soda, and then we had a strawberry snow cone that was just like strawberry candy. It was a sour diesel crossed with a strawberry cough, and I mean, it was just beautiful. And
right.
So, you know, I just became obsessed with it. And at first we were mainly dealing with regular seeds because at the time I believed that regular seeds were superior to feminized seeds. And I knew that feminized seeds had a tendency to produce more herms. And so, I was trying to stay away from feminized seeds. But one of the problems you run across with regular seeds is you can try to do your best, and you can try to study all the ways that you can and how to pick the proper male, but at the end of the day, you really don't know what that male is going to contribute. You know, you're just making your best guess.
Yeah.
So and then with feminized seeds, or you know, you're taking a female and you're crossing with another female, well, you know exactly what those genetics are going to contribute on both sides, which is why, in my opinion, if you look at all the classics like the Sour Diesel, you know, OG Kush, and, you know, Chem Dog and whatever, all those were made from hermaphrodites in the garden or people stressing their plants out and purposely producing pollen. But, you know, a lot
crazy,
of people,
right? Wow.
Yeah. A lot of people don't know that. And, you know, there's a lot of people, they say, oh, I love Sour Diesel. I love all the classics, but I hate feminized seeds, you know, because I heard this or heard that. Well, all the classics that they love came from feminized seeds. And
incredible.
Because you know what the genetics are going to contribute, I can, you know, it totally makes sense to me why. But it took me a little while to see that and come around on feminized seeds. And, you know, now that's mainly what we focus on because ultimately, you know, my goal, something that is very important to me, is that when growers pop those seeds and they grow them out, and, you know, they see what that flower blossoms into, that they're going, holy shit, this is amazing. And that they're just in love with the plant. And, you know, it was very important to me that that the customers loved what they, you know, they're going to give us their hard-earned money for seeds and put, you know, invest their resources. I want to make sure that we're doing a great job for them. And, you know, feminized seeds in general will produce more hermaphrodites than regular seeds, but, you know, it's a trade-off like anything else. And as experienced growers, you know, we always need to make sure that when we're popping any kind of seeds, regular or feminized, that we're keeping an eye open for, you know, things that can go wrong with that. But, you know, I also accidentally came across a method that I haven't heard of anybody else using. We keep it proprietary with how we reverse the plants and produce pollen.
Got you.
And the feedback that I've gotten from a lot of the growers over the years is, on average, a lot of our strains produce less herms than many of our competitors. And I believe that it is because the methods that we've used. You know, there was a breeder that became real big at the time when I first got started. And then all of a sudden they became known for everything that they put out was producing hermaphrodite plants. Mm-hmm. Well, they used a particular method where they would just let the plants keep going into flower until they got stressed out and they would just produce pollen on their own. But that method tends to produce a lot more herms. And so anyway, it was just a journey in trying to figure out what works, what doesn't work, and making adjustments as needed. But we're just as committed as we ever were to providing a top-notch quality, you know, seed and genetics to the customers, which, you know, we care very much about what they get. So
What a journey. And I mean, that's like 2014 we're talking, right? Is when Elevate kind of, I guess, got established. And you were probably already getting your hands dirty, I'm sure, far before then in investigating and doing a lot of this work already prior to, huh?
Oh, yeah. I'm the kind of person that whatever I do, I get obsessed with. And, you know, I just can't think of anything else. And so for many years, you know, at first it was, you know, learning how to grow and, you know, going through that process over a period of years and then getting mm-hmm. into breeding. And then I just became obsessed with that and, you know, was reading everything that I could. And so, but yeah, it's been a lot of fun. And I know that, you know, there's a, as far as a job goes, it's probably one of the best jobs out there.
I think you nailed it right on the head. It really is one of the best spaces to work in. And doing what you do is unique. And I see it like almost like an art, like a craft.
Right.
You know, grabbing these different flavors and mixing them together. And you hit on so many things over the last few minutes that I can't wait to dive deeper on here in this podcast. And I want to hit some specific questions on a lot of that. But one of the things I wanted to dive and share as much as I guess you're willing to or you would like to on this. But I know you guys have, you know, elite clone onlys mm-hmm. that you guys have access to and that you're getting. And we'll get to where you guys are getting that here in a second. But what is some of the process that you guys are specifically doing to cross these clone onlys, you know, that we're seeing that are hot, that are fire, that are on the market?
Yeah, you know, I think the first step is to be able to acquire, you know, great genetics. It's kind of like if you're breeding racehorses, you know, you need great, you know, winning racehorses to breed with. And in the beginning, I didn't have a lot of contacts, so I was pretty limited as to what I could get. And then years ago, I had the good fortune of being introduced to a guy down in California. And, you know, he's one of those guys that he's just a great guy. You know, he's one of those people, his word is his bond. And, you know, he's friendly, he loves everybody, so everybody loves him. So he knew everybody in California, and he's been growing for, you know, probably 40 years and breeding that whole time. So, right. You know, he knew, you know, like the Jungle Boys and all that. He was right there in that space, in that area, you know, in California.
Right.
So very well connected. And so we became friends. And, you know, if he didn't have something already, he was usually pretty good at acquiring it. And so that's where we get most of our genetics from him. Of course, we're always
right.
You know, keeping our eyes
that's
and ears
sick.
Open. So but yeah. It definitely starts there.
No doubt. Wow. So this is something, I guess, you know, I'm in Colombia and I often dream of like, wow, how amazing would it be to be able to share clones or get my hands on some of these clones? But I'm like out of the country, so it's not even an option. And that's why I love looking at the work that you're doing there. I'm like, okay, cool. Like these different flavors, you know, they're being presented, they're being combined, and it looks like you're doing a fantastic job at it. But one of the questions that ran through my mind was, let's say I was in the States, this doesn't seem like something that anyone could just go out and buy some of these cuts.
No.
Is this something that is relationship only? Like, how does that part, that whole dynamic kind of work? It has me so curious.
Yeah, it's definitely relationship only. And, you know, also there's a lot of people, you know, circulating cuts where they say it's one thing and it's not that. So, you know,
imagine,
and for
yeah.
us, obviously, you know, our worst nightmare is to start investing all our resources to breed with the strain only to find out that it's not the actual strain that we thought it was. So
right.
Having a very reliable contact, it was critical. But, you know, I always loved the candy, you know, sweet, fruity stuff, you know, so I was,
yeah.
I would kind of lean towards that. Of course, I know a lot of people like that stinky gym sock gas, you know, so
uh-huh.
we include that in there too. But I just can't resist a good, you know, candy strain.
Dude, oh, that's amazing. Yeah, see me, I'm such a fruity dude when it comes to the terps.
Yeah.
You get candy in there and then it gets me interesting. It makes it unique. But I agree with you. There is such a huge market. Like I always call it like the crowd pleaser when you walk into a cup or an event with that crazy gas,
yeah.
you know, or that gym sock or whatever, you know, you go into that disgusting realm. And it really is a crowd pleaser but I'm just like yourself, where I find myself in this unique realm of whether it's fruity, candies are delicious. And we'll be talking about some of the new strains and stuff that you have here just in in a sec later in this podcast. But so one of the random questions I had for you, because I thought maybe you guys go out and you acquire some of the things. I don't know the market in the States for the clones and the cuts or what that looks like. And one of the questions was like, what is one of the most expensive clones that you guys have maybe acquired? But it's not really such a relevant question because you guys are, it's more relationship based and it's not so going out to a market or like hot bidding. Okay. As a random question, do you know, just for those curious and listening on the podcast in that market, like, is there a crazy cost world of like some cuts being exclusive and it could be like a crazy amount, or is that kind of all
Yeah. You know, there's some cuts that, you know, like, Gary Payton, I've seen him go for, you know, $1,500, $2,000 a cut. And
wow.
You know, most of the strains that we get, I would say probably, you know, I'm not saying there's anything positive or negative about hype, but a lot of them have a lot of hype around the strains because people know what it is. You know, if they look at the parents and it's Gary Payton crossed with Oreos, you know, that pretty much sells itself, you know, so there's that trade off to, do we get the hype or do we get the strains that are amazing? And they also have a hype, but what about these strains that are like crazy good, but they don't have a lot of hype about them. And you know, if people knew about them, you know, there would be a lot of hype. Like, for example, we've got a strain called Nerds Rope, which is different than Nerds, but, you know, it's not one that if you were to look up, you can't find anything on it, but it's just insanely good.
And sounds delicious.
Yeah. And so, you know, so we do, we'll just as a matter of pride in what we do, you know, I'll breed with those strains, even people haven't heard of them, and, you know, just try to sell it to people in the description that, hey, this is a badass strain. So, you know, give it a try. So yeah, it's a trade-off.
That's sick. Yeah, no doubt. You definitely introduced me to a new batch, and we'll get into the talks of the Runtopia here in a second, because my goodness, the terps that we found in that were unreal.
Yeah.
But that leads us kind of into the next transition I wanted to talk about. I had the honor to be able to join your test group. And I know that you guys pride yourselves and work in a different kind of way with your testers. So fill me in a little bit about the process of the way Elevate works with testers. What is it for and what are you guys doing there?
Well, there's a couple reasons why we work with testers. One, of course, is, you know, we've got a lot of strains out there, and as we put them out, people want to see pictures of them, so we try to get as many pictures as we can. Sometimes the pictures aren't something we can really use because, you know, if it doesn't really represent the strain well, it can actually be a negative. You know, let's say something happened in their grow or it just wasn't excellent or whatever. As you know, sometimes people are great growers, but they're not good photographers or vice versa. Our nightmare is that we put out a strain and it's just a herm machine. You know, so it's so important to us that, you know, if someone's, like I said before, if someone buys something, they give us their hard-earned money, that we're not going to give them a problematic batch of seeds. And
right.
So we give them to the testers. We want to find out, you know, what is that? What do those seeds produce exactly? We know what the parents are, but, you know, there's a lot of breeders mm-hmm. out there that they take a couple good parents, put them together and put the seeds out, you know, putting their full faith in the fact that, you know, the parents were good. But sometimes there's a recessive trait in one of the parents to hermaphrodite, or, you know, maybe it's a slow grower, whatever the case is. And so,
right,
you know, what is the tendency for that, those plants to herm? And so the testers give us that feedback. You know, it takes a lot of resources.
Wow.
It takes more time. You know, we invest a lot to create these seeds. And, mm-hmm. you know, if we give them to a tester and they come back and they say, hey, I got some herms on this, that means everything that we've invested in that strain, we throw the seeds away. They're trash. We're not going to risk our reputation
wow.
On a bad batch. So, you know,
no
the testers either say, yeah, we grew them out and they were, you know, they're fucking amazing, or we grew them out and, you know, we got some herms that were above what would be an acceptable rate for feminized seeds. And so then we just, you know, we got to toss them.
Wow. And so is this something that you guys have implemented along the way? Was this something that you've had from the very beginning? Or where did the phase of kind of having testers involved with your guys's, you know, launch?
Well, I would, you know, to be honest, it evolved over time. you know, we've always believed in testing because, you know, the proof is in the pudding. You know, one, you really got to grow them out before you really know what's right in there. And so, you know, and the bigger we get, you know, the more possibility there is of negative news spreading quickly. And so we want to make sure that if we're releasing a strain, you know, that it's not going to be problematic. So, you know, we have a list of testers, and we're always keeping our eyes open for more, you know, provided they do, you know, great pitchers and they're good, knowledgeable growers, you know, they're checking their plants for hermaphrodites. They give us the feedback, you know, how many herms did they get, you know, whatever the case may be. By the way, your pictures are amazing. Some of the best I've ever seen. So I just wanted to add
that. Thanks, brother. So I appreciate that.
Yeah. So that's kind of where our testers are. And if anybody, you know, is an experienced grower and they do phenomenal pitchers, if they, you know, ever send us some pitchers and request to be a tester, you know, we'll put them on the list of, you know, considering them, which all right that really involves and is we send them our new gear. You know, we pick out the ones to send them. And then, you know, if they grow them out, provide us feedback and send us some great pitchers, then we just keep sending them our new stuff.
That's awesome. I really love what you guys have set up there. And I thought it was really cool. Like for me, I'm just discovering this world. I didn't really know it was a thing that long ago that breeders are testing. When I discovered it, I was like, that makes sense. I think it should be done more as well. And this was one of my first like tester breeding programs that I got to be a part of. And I thought like, for example, on a lot of my episodes, a lot of people have seen the Seed to Harvest. We've only ever tested one or two seeds of each pack. You know, when we go and do, you know, like when we're strain hunting, we're doing these things, we're not really necessarily pheno hunting. And that I love, like when I see that you guys like request or you suggest as much as possible to pop the entire pack to get a full survey out of there. That showed me right away. I was like, oh, this is cool. There is expectations. There is some things that we have to do and kind of follow along as we test and do. Is this something that you see a lot of other breeders doing? Is it picking up? Is it picking up steam? Like how many other breeders are actually testing their gear before it's launched?
You know, it's hard to say. I think all breeders should do it. And if you were to ask a breeder if they have their stuff tested first, of course they're going to say yes, they are doing that.
Right.
You know, I'm a little disappointed sometimes at some of the integrity that I've seen out there in the market. Like for example, if we send someone a pack of seeds, you know, sometimes you know, they'll have something will go wrong with the seeds, whether it's the germination. Then we find out that it was something that they did. You know, maybe they had a heating mat underneath and the heating mat just, you know, cooked the seeds or whatever. But just to err on the side of the customer and making them happy, you know, we'll replace their seeds for them. Of course, you know, we always hope that they're being honest with us, that we're just going to assume that they're being honest. And, you know, we'll send them a replacement pack if that's the case. But, you know, we always look for feedback. But no, I would probably guess there's very few breeders that are really testing any of their stuff. And there are some great breeders out there too that have a lot of integrity and care very much about their customers that, you know, they do test a lot. So,
right. Yeah, I really do appreciate that from your guys' end, and definitely props to you guys for doing that.
Thank you.
It immediately made me more of a fan and more like alert of like what is going to be coming in the future and these drops, just to see the work that goes into it before launch, right? Like I had my hands and I was testing the Runstopia far before you guys were even in launch, right? So I thought that was really cool. You guys had a nice survey already put out there before then. That was kind of my first entry into it, my first introduction. So that was really cool. One of the questions that I get, especially testing so many different breeders and testing so many different things, is the relation to Hermes. Like, what is the general kind of rate? What's an average percentage people see in feminized seeds? So to talk about the Hermes for a second, what is the kind of like general percentage that you would see in general?
That's a great question. One thing that we found is that, you know, when we try to reverse a plant, purposely get it to produce pollen, you know, by using chemical means, that about 70-75% of all strains, you know, they're able to switch over to being right. male. Some, there's just nothing you can do to make them herm. They're just not going to happen. You know, and the hermaphroditic, if that's a word, you know, tendency is actually something that it evolved to do as a survival mechanism, you know, so that if the plant is getting stressed or it's not producing seeds, you know, just like any species, you know, its main goal is to reproduce. And so yeah. it's a survival mechanism of cannabis. And of course, you know, as breeders, we're always trying to breed that out of the plant, but it's naturally in the plant. So, you know, so as we're breeding, you know, with feminized seeds, if we pop 12 seeds and if we get no herms, obviously that's amazing. If we get one that herms, I would say that's probably acceptable if the strain is amazing. Gotcha. You know, once you start getting more than one out of a dozen, you know, that's not going to be a strain that we're going to release. You know, there was a, you know, I remember Gorilla Cookies when we came out with that, which by the way, I mentioned I'm not a huge fan of gassy strains, but that's my all time favorite. A gassy strain. It's just got like this real unique, exotic kind of gassy cookie flavor, and which is Gorilla Glue crossed with Thin Mint Girl Scout cookies. Okay. And you know, it did produce some herms from time to time. And so I got on the phone right. and I started calling some of the people that grew it out, and I wanted to get their feedback. You know, this we've seen that when we grow it out, it produces this percentage of herms and so on. What do you guys think? Wow. You know, should we pull it?
Yeah.
Should we still make it available? And the feedback that we got is that it was so fucking amazing that it was worth an occasional herm here and there. And so we chose to keep it on wow. the menu. So, you know, and yeah. that's that. You got to make that decision about what is the most important, because it can't be avoided completely.
Mm-hmm.
And right. And whether it's regular seeds or feminized seeds, and that's going to be the case for any breeder because we're working with cannabis.
Right. Over your guys' test group and having such a large survey over different testers, what are some of like the most common, I guess, stressors to the plant that cause it to herm? If like, is there any common or major ones that jump to mind right away?
Yeah, you know, that's a great question. You know, there's the obvious well-known ones like light leaks. You know, I've had yeah. times where yeah. I thought my lights were turning off and the timer went bad. You know, you go in there.
I'm guilty, bro. Like twice yeah. over hard. And,
right. Yeah. And the lights are on, you know, and then you get problems, you know, whether there's big pH fluctuations that can cause it.
Okay.
Stress, you know, sometimes people are growing their plants during the summertime and their AC just isn't able to keep up.
Yep.
Foliar sprays can really? Be make that, you know, bring out that tendency to herm. I remember once, wow. you know, I had a big crop of, you know, just random strains, and I got some powdery mildew in there, and so I bought some organic stuff for powdery mildew, sprayed it on the plants. Mm-hmm. Everything hermed. I even had a strawberry cloth in there that I couldn't get to reverse to produce pollen for the life of me. Even that produced yep. pollen. And so I was shocked, you know, that happened. You know, there was also a time where I was having some issues with some root rot because of the method that I was using at the time. It was in hydro, and you know, I wasn't. There were just some methods that probably needed to be perfected, and yeah. so I started applying hydrogen peroxide to the root,
mm-hmm.
Which is great to help with root rot. But then they started yeah. growing real strange, and it was in flower. Whereas, you know, when they're in veg, and you give the plants hydrogen peroxide, you know, to, you know, kill root gnats or whatever the case is, you don't see the stress, but when it's in flower, a lot of times you see it.
Right. No doubt. See that, I was really glad we covered that because I don't feel like there's enough information on that or yeah. data out on the internet yet for people to hear or enough honest experiences from people herming out a crop from, let's say, maybe doing a preventative spray or whatever it might be. And so I'm really glad we got to cover that. That's unbelievable that we're, even seeing it from certain sprays like H2O2 or the hydrogen peroxide is something that I've kind of even steered away from in my worry of powdery mildew, just because of that, just because I just really don't know and have heard stories and seen. So the more data we can share and dive into it, the better for sure.
Yeah, I agree. You know, we put out like a tips from growing from seed. And, you know, so everybody that purchases seeds, you know, they get access to that document, but very few people, you know, will read it. And, you know, so sometimes there's issues, but we try to do our best to educate people, you know, watch for herms. This is what you're looking for. This is when you're looking for it. This is what can cause it. This is what causes low germination, you know, that type of thing.
I love it. To transition the conversation a little bit to another hot topic or something that's very often discussed is like the pros and cons for regular seeds and fem seeds. I know we brushed on it, but let's dive a little bit deeper into that pros and cons for fem versus regular.
Yeah. As I mentioned earlier, you know, I was adamant that we were only going to breed with regular seeds.
Right.
And I was, you know, one of those people, I was kind of militant against feminized seeds, you know, because I'd heard the stories that, you know, they herm more often and so on. And as a breeder, I started realizing that when picking the male is a great talent and an art in itself. And even then, you know, it's really just guesswork. And guesswork isn't good enough. You know, and so with feminized seeds, you know, it's easier to get the genetic contribution exactly what you want it to be. And then I started thinking about, you know, here I was so against feminized seeds and what might happen if you grow from feminized seeds. And I started thinking Sour Diesel came from a feminized seed, you know, OG Kush came from a feminized seed, you know, Gorilla Glue No. 4. Came from a hermaphrodite in the garden where the grower didn't find it, and it seeded out the garden, and the guy's friend ended up popping some and finding Gorilla Glue 4 out of something like 6 seeds, you know?
Right. So, that's nuts.
Yeah. By the way, I wanted to touch a little bit on, you know, when you'd mentioned, you know, growing out 2 seeds to see what that strain is like, or, you know, how we, you know, we want the testers to grow out 12 seeds. You know, when we say that we want them to grow out 12 seeds, it doesn't necessarily mean they're going to finish the grow with 12 plants. You know, let's say they pop 12 seeds. You know how it goes. You get some seedlings and, you know, 10 of them are, you know, they're looking like they're right on point. Then 2 of them, they're looking kind of scrawny. Yes. They're not growing very fast. So you toss those. You know, then they're starting to grow in the veg. One of them's a slow grower. You toss that one. You know, you're going into flower,
right?
You know, maybe one of them's just not, you know, you're not seeing any frost, you know, there's no smell or whatever. You can tell that early on.
Yeah.
Or maybe you find a herm, obviously. So you're going to toss that. Well, out of 12 seeds,
right,
if you're looking for great plants, you may only end up with 4 plants. So,
right.
And, you know, if someone pops 2 seeds, well, statistically speaking, it's actually unlikely that they would find the best phenotype as if they were, you know, compared to if they were to pop a dozen. So that's why we're adamant. You know, they can toss some plants along the way, but we want them to at least pop 12.
I love that. I think you guys have totally changed my mentality as a tester, as a grower now here moving forward, because I think like I was playing the lottery mentality when it came to pheno hunting, right? It's just like, okay, pop in one. Like that's really going to give me a good selection. Like now that I've been able to survey more than 1 or 2, you know, 6, you know, and again, some people listening to this are able to survey 20 and 50. Some are only able to like survey and pop 2 because that's their limit. And I get that, but I totally now understand what it means to actually get a bigger look at the scope of what those genetics have inside of it. And I totally understand, and even after having more podcasts with different breeders, of what you just said there, of throwing away along the way and not being worried, you know, over-popping and then just getting rid of them along the way. And then you end up with, you know, your hopeful winner there. And even I heard it quoted not too long ago, it was like, you know, popping up 100 at least to find your winner there. And I'm like, geez, well, I'm at least going to start with full pack for now. We'll work up to 100 down the road. But it was amazing, man. So I think you guys totally shifted my way of thinking. I think from here on out, we will always pop a pack, even if we only plan to bring two to flower.
Right.
It's like, let's go full pack. Let's get rid of them along the way, even like from what you're saying, you know, small dwarf or whatever we have here. And then that's going to give us the best probability to end up with our best two at the end. So I appreciate you. And I wanted to say thank you for that.
Yeah.
By the way, for pushing me into that zone, brother.
You know, some people, they'll say, well, I don't have the room to grow 12. You know, I only have the room to grow out 4. It's like, yeah, but you do right. have the room to pop 12 seeds. And then when they're small, you know, you can fit, you know, 10 to 12 in that space. And then as they're growing and, you know, you can cull some of the runts out, the ones that just aren't looking real good.
So what about the benefits now? Because I know, again, me being a Colombian, but I know a lot of people are in the States, obviously, listening to this. And getting clones is a thing. So what about the whole conversation of the pros and cons now with seeds versus clones?
Yeah, that's a good question. You know, of course, whenever you get clones, you always run the risk of getting some kind of pests on there, right? You know, and
right.
You can, even if you inspect the plant, you know, you don't see anything on it. All you need is one mite egg, and that's enough to, you know, cause a lot of problems.
Right.
So, you know, there's always a risk bringing in clones with that issue. Also, one of the things that we found is that, like, for example, you know, we've gotten some really good strains in the genetics, and then we start growing them, and there's something funky with the way it's growing. And one of the things I learned is, like, if a plant has gotten root gnats, for example, and it's gotten to the point where it's in the infestation has gotten past, you know, a certain point, it will affect the genetics of that plant, or I think you call it the epigenetics of that plant and how those genes are expressed permanently, even after you get rid of the root gnats. And it would just, there's something about the way it grows. And so, you know, I remember I paid a lot of money for a cut of Oreos, and and then we ended up replacing it with a new one down the road. But, you know, I was looking at the plant. It's like, what is wrong with that plant? You know, just there was something about, you know, it wasn't growing normal. I've noticed it with other plants, you know, and I think it's because whoever you got it from, they had maybe root gnats, or there was something that happened, and it affects the genetics, how that's affected. Or, you know, if you try to get a clone of sour diesel that's a couple decades old, well, depending on what source you get it from, it may look like two totally different plants, you know, where the genetics are old. And, you know, because even if you take cuts, it's still taking the age of the genetics from when that seed, basically when that plant was born, when it was germinated. And so it depends on how well those people took care of that clone. Over the years will determine, you know, the vigor and the health of the plant now. So.
Right. No doubt, man. And I feel like I fought my war against spider mites and I won, thankfully. Right. And that was like a while ago. And that came from a clone. And then I fought my war against powdery mildew, bro. And then, you know, thank goodness, like literally, thank God I came out of that. And, you know, everything's live and we're good and we're in a new era. And I just feel like I'm not ready to fight any more wars or do any of that stuff anymore. And this whole new thing that's floating around of HLVD, or the seriousness of it, I don't know if I'm saying it right or pronouncing it right, the whole disease from clones, right? And I've been hearing, listening to different podcasts of like, is this the end of the clone era to a certain degree, or at least wiping it out to a certain phase? And then even heard rumors of certain things being passed down into the seed form. So that, it just got me crazy, and it just drove me even deeper into my desire to keep my hunt going through seed form, at least right now, and to keep it going. And then especially when I brought the conversation to the table of these elite clone onlys that exist, these different flavors, well, having those cross together is something I'm only able to get here in Access. And that leads us right to a cross like the Runtstopia, which I want to sidebar and talk about for a second, because not only did you give me my first introduction to an actual white Runts cross, you know, that you got from clone, but you introduced me to something with that was in it, the OMFG. So before me even talking about it, I'm just so hyped up on it right now with the episode and the terps and everything, but let's talk about first the history of it and lead me through a little bit of the creation of the Runtstopia.
Yeah. So OMFG is a great strain made by Exotic Genetics, and you know, I've bred with their stuff before. I think he's a great breeder. You know, I couldn't say enough good things about some of the stuff that they put out. And yep. OMFG is a cross between Red Pop and what was
and Runt, wasn't it?
Yeah, it's I think, and so the Red Pop is not a strain that I've ever heard of, but apparently,
right.
It's just like a really loud, like strawberry syrup. And so yeah. We ended up getting this OMFG. I hadn't really heard about it. And, you know, sometimes we kind of shy away from breeding with strains that, you know, aren't really well heard of because it's just hard to sell to the customer. I grew it out. It was obviously a Red Pop dominant pheno. And it just reeked of strawberries. And I loved it. And it, big buds, very vigorous. And I was like, shit, I got to breed with this. And then, you know, so you got strawberry candy, and then you got the exotic sweet candy of Runts. You know, to me, that was a no-brainer, right? You know, that
was just right.
And I thought, oh, that's going to be a match made in heaven. I got to do that. And so I was pretty excited about making that cross. And so that basically it's like a strawberry runt, and so
it really is, man. Like in the episode we talk about, like when I found this, the pheno number 5, right, and I had my eye on it right from the beginning, simply in veg already, just because of the leaf structure was already a little bit thinner. And when I was nerding out one evening, you know, just totally ripped, and I was diving through the parent genetics and the grandparent genetics, and I was just like, oh wow, I seen that in there, you know, on that strawberry terps, and then inside of that Red Pop, is it Red Pop, sorry, that was in the OMFG Pop. Inside of there was like that strawberry with the strawberries and with the cookies and cream, sorry. And I remember that evening I was just so ripped, and I was like probably daydreaming, and I was thinking, I was like, man, I wonder if I got something on that strawberry end and that's like that and that's inside it. You know, the little did I know, we got into flower, everything was on that terp end of strawberry. It was all of exactly what you were describing.
Yeah.
But it was the flower structure, and funny enough, it was that number 5 that I picked up from the beginning that was just my favorite flower structure. She was beautiful. Her leaf to calyx ratio was unbelievable, and also the strongest on the terp end, which they were all living in that realm. So it was like that strawberry, and you think, well, not you think, but that is coming from the OMFG side. But let's jump over to the white run side of thing. Fill me in a little bit about the cut that you had from there and what we see kind of coming in from the white runs.
You know, we had acquired a cut of runs, which is a great strain, but we started hearing a lot of buzz about white runs also. And so we ended up getting our hands on a cut of white runs, and it's just super frosty. You know, it's got that that exotic candy, sweet candy, that just like regular runts has. It's just, it's a great strain, but it's got like a little bit of hashiness to it. And so that was another one. It was just, it was a no brainer. By the way, if anybody's interested, we actually ended up getting rid of the OMFG. Simply because not a lot of people have heard about it, but it is a phenomenal strain. So whatever we have in inventory, that's the last of whatever we have. So,
oh my God, man. I know we even started this podcast too. You were talking about like how you love to jump in and breed with things that aren't known. And I'm thankful for you introducing me to that. I'm officially a fan of OMFG. And again, I'm not a big white runts or even runts expert by any means. But I feel like with the little amount of knowledge that I have, that I was seeing like that the OMFG kind of leaning in there, at least with the strawberry S terps on everything.
Yeah.
The extract turned out believably delicious. But I can't believe you just threw that out. Guys, you heard that. That is now public information. OMFG no more is going to be in the family anymore, hey, of the crosses. So it immediately gets me wondering other fruity terps that you guys have or are replaced in there, and the next batch is coming up.
Well, you know, we ended up getting a legit cut of strawberry cough a while ago. And obviously for anybody that likes, you know, strawberry terps, you know, a real good cut of strawberry cough is just, it's hard to beat. So every time we put out something with strawberry cough, people, they love it. So We are going to be doing some stuff with Strawberry Cough in the future. And let's see, we've got...
Heck yeah. Actually, yeah, let's talk about that. I think that's a good moment to even transition and talk about some of the new stuff that is coming up.
Yeah.
Because I wanted to cover some of the things that are the Elevate Classics. But first, let's talk about some of the new stuff coming up, because you already had my mind blown with the Runstopia.
Yeah, we're just in the process of dropping some strains that we made from our RS11 series. And RS11 kind of fits that bill of not only does it have the hype and it's got the reputation and, you know, it's won some awards, but, you know, it's just a great plant. It's nice and vigorous. It's got that loud fruity-esque, you know, kind of thing going on.
So there is some fruit in there, huh?
Oh yeah. Let's see. We put out some cereal milk crosses a while ago. Okay. And at the time, there was a lot of hype going around about cereal milk. But you know how people are, you know, this comes out and their attention's over here, and then that comes out and their attention's over there. Cereal milk is an amazing strain. I'm just telling you, in my mind, I've said this before, and people say, don't say that, or people get mad, but it's what Fruity Loops wants to be. It's just got that Fruit Loops cereal milk. Kind of taste, but it's vigorous, big buds, nice and frosty. Dang, great producer. So we have a whole line of cereal milk, and it's done pretty well. But I think if people really knew how good cereal milk was, they would, you know, they would put a little bit more attention to it. So we've got some great crosses with cereal milk. Let's see. We got Forbidden Fruit too. We've done a lot of stuff with Forbidden Fruit. Oh. You know, sometimes it's a little difficult breeding with the purple strains because, you know, sometimes they lack the potency, or, you know, there's just not a lot of smell that just comes and knocks you out. Forbidden Fruit is an awesome strain. I mean, it's got a terp profile that just smacks you in the face, and it's got these beautiful purples and so on. So we did a cross with Forbidden Fruit and Runts, and it just came out amazing.
But, oof, that's the Forbidden Runts, right? Yeah. I seen that up on, no doubt. Oh my God, I got really blown away and hyped on the Forbidden Fruit terps, because I sent you the video, actually. Mr. Q is running a few of Forbidden Fruit crosses.
He's going to love it.
And you see the size on those things, bro? It was unreal, the size. Two of them were purple as heck, bro. But all of them were just ridiculously a fruit that should be forbidden. And if that fruit was in the garden, I would go bite that apple. You know, I can't blame him, dude. That thing is just ridiculous, man.
Yeah.
No doubt.
Yeah.
And the other one you got me curious on, sorry to cut you off, was the cereal milk. That is, I've seen the name a lot, but this is the first conversation I've actually had with someone with a good description on the terp profile, or like kind of a breakdown. And then the fact that you talked about the production. Listen, I know I don't technically get to choose as a tester what's up, but you know, if you guys are down, I'm allowed to keep testing, or if we're down to do it again.
If I get a selection, I'll get you hooked up with whatever you want. But yeah, we'll definitely send you some great cereal milk across. I'll personally pick out a couple that I think are just over the top, and I'll make sure they get to you. I'll send you some RS11 stuff too.
Oh my God, that's amazing, brother. I love it. You guys heard it right here. We're going to definitely keep trying some of these crosses, because what we've seen from the Runstopia was unbelievable. And I don't even know if I had the chance to tell you or anyone here on the audience. I'm sure it's in the episode, which is already live, but we actually sent the samples of the live extract, the live rosin, and the hash as well, the bubble hash, to the biggest cannabis cup here in Colombia, which is at the end of the month here in a few weeks. So I'm really excited to see the results.
Yeah.
Going in with no expectations, just the first time I've ever entered in these categories, but more so just to go and share the amazing terps that we found out of that Runstopia, man. It was delicious.
I love that you love it.
Yeah, dude. Oh my God. Wait till you see the video. I can't wait, because it's there's a lot of passion in there, because the terps just made it happen. The terps brought my nose in, you know, the nose knows, and it knew that the Runstopia was something special and does hold a special place in my heart. For those that seen the episode, you know that we also kept two winning mothers, one for washing, that is an unbelievable huge trichome heads, and then the number five, which was my favorite for dry flower, ridiculous terps, great producer. So there was two winners. That's the first time we've ever had two winners on any of the episodes ever. If we get lucky, and it's very rare, we find one winner, I don't know if that's the luck from popping the full pack. You know, I'm sure obviously it has a lot to do with the cross and what you guys have done there. It says a lot for the cross, but I want to make sure we don't skip over the things that put you guys also on the map. Some of the classic strains that you guys are known for. I know you guys have been featured also in High Times. I know we lightly mentioned it at the beginning, but let's take some time to talk about some of the things that put you guys on the map and some of the other big playing strains that you think will always kind of be around.
Yeah. You know, one of the first, there's actually three strains that I take a lot of pride in when we first got started. One was a Blackberry Dream, which was a Kimbo Kush. Actually, it was made, that was put out by Exotic Genetics. Super frosty, great smell, you know, just really nice terp profile. And we ended up crossing that with the Super Silver Haze, because I was looking for a plant that just had a great high to it. You know, of course, we love the terps, we love the taste, but, you know, I'm sure we've all had those strains from time to time where it tastes great, but the high is just, you know, it's just not... I like those highs where you go outside, you feel the sun on your face, and, you know, everything is right with the world, you know, and you love everyone, you know, and just everything is calm. And so I'm really into the quality of the high, and Blackberry Dream was one of those for me.
Interesting, right.
I think the quality of the high was brought in by the Super Silver Haze. And then there was our Tangerine Cookies, which I went through a lot of seeds to find a very special tangy male. And then I crossed that with our Thin Mint Girl Scout Cookies, which is ridiculously frosty, and did a large pheno run or pheno hunt, and ended up finding a Tangerine Cookies that was just out of this world with terps and had pretty good yield. It was vigorous, nice solid buds. And so we actually crossed that with Runtz, by the way, our Tangy Candy, which that's also limited in inventory. If you like oranges, it's ridiculous. It's got frost for days, and that's another one where the terp profile just comes out and smacks you.
Oh my God, that sounds right up my alley as well, brother. Dude, that is good.
And then we had a Strawberry Snow Cone, which I mentioned earlier. That was the Sour Diesel cross with the an old school Strawberry Cough. And I grew a bunch out, and there was this one that just, it was just insanely terpy, and it was like a sour strawberry candy, and it was just amazing. So we sold those seeds in regular form for quite a while.
Yeah.
And but I love that one too, and so yeah.
God, what was the one that was on the 2018 High Times, because that was the year, one of my favorite as well all times in the lemons, and we're talking about oranges, was the Franco's Lemon Cheese. And rest in peace, Franco, and God bless your soul, brother. And that strain was unbelievable. And you guys were on the list that same year as well, right?
Yeah, I don't know if we've had a couple in there, so I can't remember which one it is exactly, but we did get a cut of Lemon Tree. And we had a lemon snow cone also, and this was another one that was just like insanely frosty, just like really, really loud lemon. That was a fun one to breed with. And we actually crossed the Lemon Tree with Runtz, and you know.
Okay.
But the one thing with the Lemon Tree is we couldn't get to yield very many seeds. And so it was kind of prohibitive to work with, you know, if you're trying to build up a business. But
the
quality was really nice. And by the way, if you ever want any of those seeds, I'd be happy to give you some too.
My goodness, man. Yeah, you've just like quadruple X my list of like things that I want to test now. I've definitely a few of those for sure, man. You have me at Cereal Milk as well with those RS11s. And again, always here and at service, brother. Anything we can test and help show, you know, results and bringing all the way from seed now to extract and, you know, cannabinoids, anything that we can help and be of any value, brother.
Yeah.
Definitely count on us for that.
Yeah, thank you.
I know one thing as well that we were talking about, I don't think it was on the podcast, and I want to make sure that we get to cover this, was the group. and having a second to talk about, you guys have a group and a community section going on that you wanted to highlight.
Yeah. We have a Facebook group, and it's called Elevate Seeds Growers Community. And, just people can talk about, the stuff that, the different strains that they're growing out, post some pictures. We keep the group real positive and uplifting and, people encouraging each other. You know how it gets online, there's always some people out there that are looking to troll or whatever. And, as a company, we try to stay positive and, not shit talk other people or whatever. Like, if I don't have something good to say about my competitors or whatever, I'm just not going to say it. And, we try to keep that attitude, within the community, but that's been pretty popular too. And, matter of fact, that's where we found some of our testers. People would post these pictures of, and they were just mind blowing. I just go, holy shit,
And yeah, no doubt.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's where, like, for me, it's becoming, like, recently as well, like, Discord, if not, like, in this case right here with the private Facebook group or the Facebook group in general, like, it's almost like the catalog just going through before, and it's kind of like, as a consumer as well, it's nice to dive in there and kind of get a survey of the land. And I think for those listening, diving through, when you dive into the Elevate group, it's evident right away. You see everyone like posting fire. That was my first thing before even jumping into the test. I want to see what everyone else was doing. And I was pleasantly surprised, brother. Like that community, you guys are growing some fire out there. Everyone is sharing their different flavors, honest reviews, which I thought was great. I'll make sure we throw that up on the screen as well. And we have the links to everything like that down below in the description. As well as for the Instagram, yeah. I know this is a very tricky lay of the land to be able to navigate, but I'll make sure we have all that down in the description below. Elevate Seeds USA being the main one, right? Because I know there's Canada, but it's USA, not just US, is the main one.
Yeah. Elevate Seeds USA. Also, we're going to be launching in Europe. We're in the process of launching right now.
Huge.
And so we'll have a Elevate Seeds of Europe also.
Awesome. Well, Matt, thank you so much. I think we've covered a ton of questions that were definitely burning on my mind and a lot from the community. Is there anything else that you would like to, depart or leave here with the people of Home Grow TV?
Yeah, maybe just, we do take a lot of, we do put a lot of attention in making sure that our customers are happy. So, we do have an Elevate team that works on, the fulfilling the orders and things like that. But, I do stay involved with the customers when they have grow questions or, they pop some seeds and maybe they didn't get good results. Maybe they made a mistake. Who knows? It could be a lot of different things. But all those questions when it comes to growing, those are directed to me personally. So I personally answer those questions. I'm not always the fastest to respond, but I will respond, and I am, we do appreciate our customers a ton, and we try to do everything that we can to make sure that they're happy.
Beautiful. Awesome. Thank you so much for sharing that, Matt. I think that is important to share because it's not something you see all the time, or you definitely don't hear about that all the time. So again, thank you so much for coming out on the podcast, sharing your time here with myself and the community. And for everyone tuned in, thank you guys for watching to the end. Make sure you guys throw a like on this video, comment down below, and share this with a grow bro that might need to hear this.
Thank you.
Thanks again for tuning in, guys, and we'll see you next week on Home Grow TV.